Angio and I'm an addict. My sponsor was reminding me, keep it short. okay. What it was like. I'm an only child. I'll say I was an addict like everybody else. I mean, I was a cocaine addict. I went to a private school, but I was the only child. I always felt alone. You know, I wondered why I didn't have brothers and sisters like everybody else. And because my mother was killed, she was beaten to death with a brick by a boyfriend when I was five. It was like, okay, I don't have, ain't nothing I can do about being the only child. I'm not gonna have any siblings. I have to accept it. My grandmother raised me. She did the best she could. Later on, right before I came into recovery, I found out that she had, several people in my family had mental health issues, you know. And I always thought that it was something wrong with me. So it made me feel a little better to find out it wasn't me all these years. It was her, you know. A little understanding, you know, I had to find out about that. But I never lied or denied or hid what I did. I did it like it was legal. I sat on my porch swing smoking crack like, that's my money, I can do what I want, you know. I never tried to quit. I knew. I was like, okay, I'm gonna be a crackhead. I'm gonna be the best crackhead I can be. And it's what I did. It's what I woke up doing it. I fell asleep with the pipe in my hand and got up and continued. At some point, I started having cocaine seizures. And I would remember walking in the door somewhere and waking up somewhere else. Like, how'd I get here? And they're like, you fell out. I remember getting up and going, looking in the mirror. My front teeth were missing. They said, you walked in the door and you fell flat on your face. And I'm like, oh my God, where my pipe at? You know? yeah, you know, it was all about that. I had a short period of clean time. I have three children, biological. And every time I got pregnant, three-party commitments and things like that, I would end up going to treatment. That was my only clean time, and I remember being in Maida House with my youngest daughter, and surprisingly enough, it was the best experience ever. You know, I thought that when I got out of there, I thought like, okay, I'm cured. You know, I thought, I don't need meetings anymore, I'm good, I'm cured. You know, problem solved. I did 18 months, I participated, and I got the courts off my back. I ended up with joint custody. I was like, I thought I did something. Went to school. Toward the end of the semester in school, got a phone call, 3 a.m. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna be the middleman. I ain't gonna touch it. I'm just gonna make a profit. My biggest downfall was money. You know, that was my biggest trigger, you know, because I always figured, oh, I can go back to hustling. You know, that's all I ever knew. And one of my classmates, she was a member of AA, and she said, you didn't touch it this time, you know, and I'm like, Well, as soon as school got out, that's exactly what I did. Things work in God's way, you know. I remember running away from treatment and taking advice and from my grandmother. And I remember after I relapsed, I felt so bad. I went back to Maida House looking for the counselors to tell her that she was right and I should have listened. But it was like, okay, I had to find out the hard way, you know, that what I thought was best for me wasn't. Other people actually knew better than I did. You know, that was a surprise to me because it's like, who can tell me about what's best for me? I should know, my granny should know. And it's like, okay. me and her had a dysfunctional relationship, you know, enabler type. Took a while for me to learn about what that was, and that's what I grew up in. This recovery, my grandmother, she started having dementia, so she needed someone to take care of her. I tried my best. I knew this is the woman who raised me. Of course I can be there for her. I can pay her bills for her. I can handle her money, this and that. Well, with access to her money, there was no need for me to turn tricks to get money to get high off of. I'll just take 20 here. I'll pay that bill, but I'm gonna take 50 and go get me a 16th so I can sit in front of the computer and pay the bill without having to be interrupted. It was all types of justifications. You know, that, oh, this is my fee for doing this, you know, whatever. But when she found out about it, out of all the things I did in my using career, I felt guilt. And I had to admit to myself that I can't take care of me or her as long as I'm using. I can't. Then I find out my father has 6 weeks maybe to live, 4-stage lung cancer. These two were the only family, closest people I knew. And I'm like, oh my God, both of them gonna be gone. What am I gonna do? Well, I knew one thing I couldn't do is continue to use. I called 211, I went into treatment. I was figuring, oh yeah, I'm gonna go back to Meda House. It's, you know, it's nice and, you know, structured and everything, and that's all I have to do. Well, couldn't get in Meda House. I was at the point where, okay, I'll do outpatient, I'll do whatever. Everything worked out. It worked out, not my plan, it was God's plan. Okay, he always has a better plan than me. My first week, that weekend, I was like, okay, I'm go to a meeting. I walk in the meeting, I see a woman I knew. She was my roommate's sponsor when I was in Meda House. And I remember her because I was like, oh my God, I don't want her. I would never have her as my sponsor. She's too strict. But seeing a familiar face, I was like, will you be my sponsor? And she's like, yes. And she's like, this is what you have to do. I said, I already know. I'm ready. I'll do it. You know. And she was my sponsor for the beginning. She helped me build a nice, strong foundation in recovery. Learning to pick up the phone, the using dreams, I called her. During the day, I was with my dad. During the evening, I was with my dad. And during the day, I was at day treatment. I was at Gateway. And I was terrified of picking up. I was so terrified. At the same time, my sister's getting married. She's trying to hurry up and get married before, because she wants my dad to walk her down the aisle. He did, in a wheelchair. But he was there, and it happened. It was just a whole bunch of family and pressure, and I used my tools. I called my sponsor every day. I did everything I had to do because I was so terrified of picking up again. I remember that. I do. It was a bit serious fear. At some point, she right away got me to chairing. What's that? Let's Stay Together? Yeah. She couldn't make it one day, and she's like, I need you to go. And next thing I know, I was the chair of her. I was chairing that meeting. I chaired that meeting for about 2 years. Yeah. But the responsibility and It all comes together. It's crazy when I look back on it. But now, today, I can say that I am so grateful for CA, this fellowship, because you all are my family. You know, I made it through my grandmother's funeral. I was able to get clean and take care of her. And at her funeral, I looked around and, oh my God, my sponsor and my friends from CA were right there supporting me. When I had to move out my father's house, I'd never moved in my life. So, I mean, I was like overwhelmed. I was freaking out. And 7 o'clock in the morning, all these cars pull up and these people I've been seeing at these meetings are all just coming in and they're just packing up. And I started hyperventilating because my family was like, they're helping you for free? And I was just like, they was like, wow, what organization is this? You know, it's just, it's a lot of things that, because of my 20 years of being an addict and my issues of normal life stuff that I did not know, I never experienced, you know, and the people in this fellowship, I have been there for me when I had questions. You know, it's simple stuff. Like, how do you make coffee? I didn't know how. Simple stuff, but I could ask and get advice I could trust. Because, you know, out on the streets, it's like, okay, ain't nobody going to tell you nothing and don't believe what they tell you anyway. They ain't going to tell you the truth. Well, I get the truth. I share the truth. You know, I love this fellowship, and I love what you people for being there for me, because as she mentions on my hitting my boyfriend, well, with that, I've been alone for 40 years. It's just me. I had to learn how to have patience, how to tolerate other people, because, you know, it's like, I love you, but you're irritating. And I've been abused before. I've been abused before. And it was shocking when I realized that I'm an abuser. You know, it's like, okay, that's the only way I knew how to express myself. I tell you, shut up. You don't shut up. I'm going to shut you up. You know, and it made sense to me. But my sponsor, she's like, no, it's another way to do it. It's a better way to do that. You know, Yeah, and I took suggestions and I worked on it because it's just constant learning, constant growing, constant. You know, I want to be a better person and function in society, you know, as a productive member, which I am proud to say I think I'm doing it. I just still call my sponsor, still got questions. You know, but tolerance and patience, you know, I had to learn. I'm learning, yeah, in the process. It's a process. It's not something you didn't have and now you're done with it. You got to keep on doing it and get better with it, you know. And I had to learn acceptance, too. 4:17, yes. You read it all the time. When I picked my current sponsor, what I was told is you think of the people you know in your fellowship and you pick someone that has what you want. And I was like, yes, I want that. I don't know. I have no idea what it is she got, but I want it. It's nice, and it works. Learn how to do it. Learn how to be it. And she just says, "What? Think as if." I was looking when I was getting prepared for speaking. I had to get some advice on what to speak about, and they said, "Like, you're a spiritual speaker." Okay. This is on page 567 in the big book. It's about the spiritual experience. It says, the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon carefully reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in a nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Okay. It was not like the immediate, like, ta-da, or aha moment, or burning bush sign from God. It's just one day I looked up and it was like, the obsession is gone. I'm okay. And it's a combination of the people that we share with, the people we get to know, the advice that we get, the trials and tribulations that we go through and successfully make it to the other side of it without using, again and again. Then we start to trust. Then we start to change. It's a gradual growth. That's what it was for me. You know, today I'm so happy to be here. I say beginning of this year, first it was battling the obsession. Then it was learning how to live as an addict. And it still is, trying to function and grow. You know, I still have questions constantly. I don't know what to do, but I feel safe. I feel as God is, yes, you know, He is showing up and showing out constantly for me. I have a new family. I have this fellowship, you know, that I'm so grateful for. You know, I really am. Where was I? Just lost my train of thought. With the spiritual growth part. Recently, toward the beginning of the year, I'm so glad this convention came about because it's important for me, I look at, is to not become complacent, okay? Still to do it one day at a time. It may not be using thoughts getting me or this and that, but it might be the pressure of life, you know, functioning, work 9 to 5. I've never had a job. This is my first time having a 9 to 5 in my life in 40 years, okay? And I'm doing it, but I'm like, whoa, this is kind of overrated. This is kind of overrated. My feet hurt. This is, okay, so I got to figure out how to work smarter, not harder. But I'm proud of myself in the same token, and I couldn't have done it without CA and recovery. You know, the difference of being clean and recovery is huge. And that's what I never understood with my other attempts at getting clean. I thought I could get fixed and cured and, oh, I'm a normal person. No, I'm never a normal person. Normal was overrated too. You know, I love today the fact that I'm an addict because we have something wonderful, which is the 12 steps of recovery. And I mean, I was explaining it to my aunt. She's like, wow. She was like, that's what y'all work on? She was like, oh, what? Everybody should do that. I said, yeah. Everybody would be better if they did it, you know. We're blessed with these instructions, these steps. But I had been lately stressing out. I hadn't been making it to many meetings and wondering why. Oh yeah, I'm starting to lose patience. I'm getting irritable and all is going on. And call my sponsor. They're tools. Once you get used to working them or using them, they become first nature for the newcomers. You know, you have, try them. They work. It's an alternative that works. Picking up don't work. We have done that. We learned that. Been there, done it. It came up to be that I was getting complacent. I got here this weekend for this, and being here reminded me what is important. You know, I was thinking, okay, my hours and where I work and how much I'm getting paid and what shifts and all this other stuff. And no. What's important is what I'm working. It's the 12 step. It's the newcomer, and it's giving back what was so freely given to me. You know, I was making it to meetings, but I was making it to H&I, and I had an experience. I bumped into a woman that I knew from when I was using, and she said something to me. She was like, "Oh my God, you're here?" She was like, "Oh, if you can do it, I know I can do it." I said, "That's what I'm here to. That's what I'm here to tell you." That's the whole reason why I'm here, is to let you know that it is doable, you know. But getting together like this at the convention and at meetings, the reason why is to stay connected and the spirituality of this, you know. It's a certain way I get without the love from my family if I don't have it, if I'm not coming to get it. I get all irritable and inside my own head, which ain't good. It's never good for an addict. I have to be reminded. And that's all I have, really.